You're listening to Good Sentences, the podcast that's guaranteed to tickle your literary ear holes and make you wish you'd listened to dear old mom when she said to put down those lawn darts and learn how to read. And now, here are your hosts, neither of whom listened to dear old mom. This is Craig A. Hart and S.J. Varengo.
Welcome, everybody, back to Good Sentences. We are, Scott and I, are pleased to have sort of a guest and sort of now a semi-regular co-host now, Angelique L'Amour. Thanks for joining us, Angelique.
Well, thanks for having me again. It makes me feel like a real writer.
You are one, and we're going to be talking about plot today, so we'll looking forward to have you weigh in on that. Scott has actually is our resident researcher and has done a lot of work on this, so I'm going to turn this over to him. Scott, take it away.
Well, thank you very much. And yes, we are talking about plot. Craig and I did a little introduction to this, the fact that we were going to discuss plot, and I had already done a little research by then, and it was already apparent to me that everybody, and when I say everybody, I'm talking about the authors that had quotes on the internet that I could find. That was my criteria. They come down basically on two sides of the subject. One is the very plot-centric school, where plot is the thing they work hardest on developing, they think is the most important. And the other is the folks that think other things are as at least equally as important. And we'll get through some of them. But the first thing I wanted to do is I figured since we're talking about plot, let's look up what the dictionary says plot is. And I went to this up-and-coming reference work called the Oxford English Dictionary. I don't know if you guys have heard of that. They have several definitions, of course, of the word. It's got a lot of different meanings. But the two that fit in the scope of our discussion, it was primarily used first, and we're talking as early as like the 1540s, to talk more about a synopsis of a story. The part that you want to put together when you're telling somebody what the story's about. Wasn't until about 100 years later that it became to use the way I think most of us do now, which is the plan or scheme of any literary creation. In Merriam-Webster's Collegiate, which I've had since I was a freshman in college because it has all the dirty words in it, so I still keep it around. I had a friend in college who actually underlined them all. I'm like, come on.
I had a friend in high school taught me how to cuss in Turkish.
Oh, that's cool.
There you go.
You can get away with all sorts of stuff.
No, can you still do it?
Her mother said it was okay as long as it was in Turkish.
Yeah, right. Which is fine until you go to Turkey and then right. You're in trouble. But anyway, their definition is simply a plan or main story of a literary work. And I found a quote from Erica Jong. You guys remember her from back in the 70s? She said, plot is just a fancy way of saying, and then, which I think is a pretty good definition.
Right.
So to start out, how do you guys feel about those definitions? Do you think that sums it up pretty well?
I remember taking a writing class, it was probably 20 years ago now, and they were really heavy on plot in terms of being a literary device to move action forward. In fact, one of the little pieces of homework we had to do was to make a sign to hang over our writing space that said plot is a verb. And we had to refer to that. You know, if we ever get stuck and you don't know what to do, just look at the top of that sign. It never helped me, by the way. It was just taking a wall space where my notes could have gone. They're pretty adamant about plot being the important thing.
Yeah, and like I said, there's quite a few writers who feel that way. As I was sifting through the several billion quotes that I found, I basically came to see that even though we do have the two camps, there's almost a third camp, a kind of neutral Switzerland in the middle. And I think that's probably where I fall, where they feel that plot is equally important as the other things, but not the driving importance. The number one quote, and it was identified as the number one quote on the website I was working, was from George Lucas, who obviously is a filmmaker, but he's also a storyteller. And he says storytelling is about two things. It's about character and it's about plot. We'll revisit that a little bit more, that combination. But what do you think about that?
I would ask Angelique, can you separate character and plot?
Yes. But I think that you can have the most exciting plot in the world, but if nobody cares about your character, you're not going to engage your audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have to either love them or hate them, or at least be interested in them and what's going on with them. I mean, you can have a great idea, for a story. But if the character work isn't there, then you don't have anything that grabs you beyond the structure. Like, I'm going to write a story about, you know, if you take Outlander, I'm going to write a story about a woman who goes back in time from 1940s England to 1760s or 1770s Scotland.
Right.
And you can't, like, okay, great. It's a great idea. So we've got all sorts of wonderful things that can happen. But if we didn't care about Claire right. at all, you would kind of go, why? So this is like great, but you have to engage. We like stories about people.
Right.
We like to see ourselves in it. We like characters who look like us. We like characters who look like someone we know. We like to engage that way. But I think that for me, plot is a structure, but I do it in a different order, I think. But I wrote down as we were starting this, it's a structure, but it's flexible, like an erector set from our childhood in the 60s, like an erector set where you can change things, but not like Lincoln Logs where you touch one and they all fall down.
Right, that's excellent.
Legos, for anybody who doesn't remember an erector set. Legos, more like Legos than Lincoln Logs. Lincoln Logs drove me crazy. breathe at them and the roof goes. But yeah. But I think that the idea of it being a device to move action forward is true. And I just went back to look. There's a woman I took a class from years ago named Martha Alderson, who's also known as the plot whisperer. And I'll read you a quote from her. She says, plot is how the dramatic action changes or transforms the protagonist's emotional development over time through cause and effect in a meaningful way.
Oh, that's excellent.
That's another one. And I mean, we could talk about what order we do things in. And when you bring up George Lucas and you know, he's obviously a very, very classic storyteller in a classic, you know, adventure sense, I feel. And I do agree with him. I think it's both. I think you can have fascinating characters, but if the story doesn't grab you, you're like, so?
Right.
And vice versa. Yeah. It doesn't take you anywhere.
Right. Well, do you think the importance of plot changes at all when you're talking between, say, genre fiction and literary fiction?
I have a problem with this distinction between literary fiction and genre fiction. Mm-hmm. And all I could say is, in my mind, a good story is a good story.
Yeah,
right.
And people want to elevate it. And yes, there are stories that are just very, very basic. You killed my father. Prepare to die. Right? Inigo Montoya's whole thing is about going, and if the story is just about him, and he's just going to kill the guy who killed his father, and maybe that isn't literary fiction, it's just escapist, it's fun, and it's engaging, and it's interesting because he's interesting. If you take something else that you consider literature, I'm not going, I don't even know what literature is these days, because I would say Hemingway, Steinbeck, Dickens wrote popular fiction at the time that they wrote it. We made it.
Right.
The people who came 50 years later made it into something that is known as literary fiction. So growing up with Dad and with his sales being what they were, he was outselling people on the New York Times bestseller list for eons before he ever got on it.
Right.
And part of that was because he was published first in paperback long time. Right. Then he became published first in hardback and then paperback, and that allowed him the opportunity. But the thing is we used to jokingly say, you know, people are more interested in what two people do in bed than they are in the opening up of an entire country. Right. And that was going to be followed by, nobody ever thinks books have value that take place west of the Mississippi. And I looked at him and said, west of the Hudson.
Right.
Right.
If it's in New York City, it's really, really important and it must be literary. But like if it's everything else, like the whole rest of the country, it's
right.
And that was those New York Times bestseller lists were like that forever.
Sure.
Right.
You know, and it was literary fiction, you know, and then people were like going, well, this guy sold 55 million copies. Maybe we should pay attention a little bit.
Right.
You know, and then you're kind of going, and I don't know what the first, I have to ask my brother that question that got on.
Charted, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
Bo probably knows that one.
Bo knows all that stuff.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. Dad used to talk, would have this conversation and he'd say, you know, everybody would say that everything's been done. And he said, and that there's no new ideas. And he said, but here's the thing. There've only been like, there were only like 13 original plots.
Right.
Yeah.
And a lot of them in the beginning, you know, like had to do with gods. Right. And had to do with that kind of interplay in with the Greeks and the Romans and like Mount Olympus and the whole thing. And as we left those behind, you know, we got down to that basic boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl. Guy goes on a journey and comes back and it's really difficult to get back. And all of those plots that we know. And, you know, it's like writing a song. There are only so many notes.
Right.
So it's very hard to make it new and fresh. So the thing that makes plot new and fresh is who's doing it.
That's a good point.
Bring his fingers back to character.
And I'm glad you guys did that so beautifully, because I do have a couple of good character quotes.
You're welcome, Scott.
Thank you. One is from, there were a couple of authors that I had to look up, I'm ashamed to say. But one of them was Vanna Bonta. Are either of you guys familiar?
Mm-mm.
No.
Yeah, well, the quote is, the real story is not the plot, but how the characters unfold by it.
Yeah.
I like that.
And then related to that is what Alice McDermott says, which is character is primary. What happens as far as plot and events is not as intriguing to me as what's happening inside this particular person.
Which becomes the plot, right. You know.
And the last quote is Harper Lee, someone, Harper Lee.
I've never heard of her. Yeah, yeah. She had like one book.
Right. Yeah, something like that. And she tried again a few decades later. And then she died. So that tells you what to do after you write your first book. Don't write the second one, because within a year you're gone. But anyway, she said characters make their own plot. The dimension of the character determines the action of the novel.
Boom. Well, there you go.
Dad used to say that he would put a character in a situation and then see what happened.
See, yeah, that's key. It's not the plot, it's how the character reacts to it.
Yeah. I'm probably beating a dead horse because I talk about Hamilton a lot. I talk about Hamilton a lot and Harry Potter a lot, and I think it's because people know it.
Yep.
And people of all ages know it.
Yep.
And the thing about Hamilton is, you know, here's this guy, and he keeps coming up in the news, and he's all over Twitter right now. And even Andrew Cuomo shared a quote. So he was a guy whose circumstances should have led him to either killing himself or, like, going to sea and vanishing.
Right.
Because the whole beginning of his life was just horrible. It's how he dealt with those circumstances that makes him unusual. And the whole reason Hamilton is exciting to an entire generation of students who got fascinated by the government and the beginning of the country and the beginning of the treasury is because he's such an interesting guy and they could see themselves in him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that brought everybody in. And then, of course, Lin-Manuel's magnificent expression. My dad didn't. Okay, so we have this conversation. Did my dad plot? Okay, so dad's main training was in writing short stories and learning what didn't get sold, right? What didn't get taken.
Right.
And learning how to do it wrong. And then he started to learn how to do it right. He wouldn't necessarily plot too much. Like, he might write down a couple of notes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's certainly, the interesting thing is there are new versions of his, new printings of his novels coming out that are the Lost Treasures versions, which means in the back there are notes about where that story came from, what he was doing when he wrote it, things in his own hand that you can sort of see what he did. Right. But what he tended to do most was he would start a story, and sometimes he would start it 5 or 6 times from page one until he got going in a direction that just took off for him. He wrote subconsciously, and I think because he had a form from short stories so completely like ingrained in him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he ever really questioned things once he really got going, but sometimes those beginnings were 7-8 chapters, and then he'd go back and he'd start over. I don't know if he was copying or he just started with the same words, because they're very, very, very similar. Mm-hmm. But he would just something would change along the way. I wish he was here so I could like have, I'd have a billion questions for him that I'd never got to ask.
Well, one of my favorite quotes and subsequent pictures of him was him saying that he could sit in the middle of Sunset Boulevard, I believe it was, and write. And so a magazine challenged him to do that, and he did. And there was a picture of him sitting there with his typewriter, and apparently he wrote like a page. And I guess the story goes, and correct me if this is inaccurate, but a truck driver drove by, looked out his window, was like, "Hey, you must be Louis L'Amour."
Was exactly what happened. And it was People Magazine.
Okay.
Yeah. And you had that Jagger on your Instagram, didn't
it's
you?
All not my, too long yes. Ago? It's on my Instagram. Okay. And Mick Jagger was on the cover of that one. And it was hysterical. He's like, yep, we're going out. He sat down with his little portable typewriter on his lap, and he wrote a page in the middle of Sunset Boulevard.
That's yet so another good. Reason he's one of my literary heroes right there.
it's definitely worth being a hero. Yeah,
absolutely. There's, I hope this is his quote, because I'm feeling like it is, something about just sitting down and writing because the water doesn't run until you turn the faucet on or something like that. I believe that was one of his.
That one's all over the internet.
Yeah.
Just start writing, the water doesn't flow. Yeah.
Yeah.
The water doesn't flow without him.
Yeah, there's definitely a few other folks who talk about that as far as just getting started and the plot follows, more or less. Vonnegut said, "I don't plot my books rigidly. Follow a preconceived structure. A novel mustn't be a closed system. It's a quest."
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Thought that was pretty good. And Tawny O'Dell says, "When I begin writing, I have no idea what my novels are ultimately going to be about. I don't have a plot. I never consider a theme. I don't make notes or outlines." So that I could have probably scratched her name out and put mine in its place.
I was going to say, I remember an interview with a writer, and I wish I could remember who it was, who wrote his entire story longhand in the middle of a legal pad with Pat. He made three columns, a kind of whitish one in the middle and two on the side. And he would write the entire story without dialogue and then write the dialogue along the side when he went back through it.
Oh, wow.
I don't know how to do that.
Yeah, I don't think I could pull that one off.
I'd get about one page in, like, oh, this is way too much work.
I'd have been lost dividing the page into three columns. That's too much work.
One, two, oh, forget it. What other quotes do you have for us there, Scott?
We've gone beautifully off target a couple of times, and the stuff we
that's what we
have
do
talked
here.
About, well, the stuff we talked about is better than the stuff I had written down. So believe me, that's why I'm thrilled it's going the way it is. I guess the only other quote I'd want to share is the one I was hoping to close with. And we don't have to necessarily close right now, but this was from, who was this from? Lydia Millay. And she says, I love this. "I advise if you're stymied by a passage or paragraph or plot point, whether it's for an assignment from the outside world or one that comes only from within, get up from whatever, wherever you're sitting, walk outdoors and do nothing but look at the sky for 5 minutes. Just stare at that thing, then execute a small bow and go back to work."
I guess I would ask Angelique, like, plot, when you're talking about plot, that's kind of where, when people talk about writer's block, that's where, you know, it comes into play. Are there anything that you do to get over writer's block? Do you believe in writer's block?
I don't.
Okay, well, forget that.
Okay, no. I'm going to be very honest. I do not believe in writer's block. I believe in book block. I believe sometimes you can get to a place in your book and you're like, I have no idea.
Right.
And that can stop you for a bit. And right now, I mean, a lot of writers certainly are talking about how they can't write. Like, everybody's struggling because this, you know, with coronavirus is so overwhelmingly huge on so many levels that you would think with all this time not allowed to run around, we would be now doing nothing but writing. I'm cleaning and cooking. I couldn't write when I was sick, and I couldn't read when I was sick. It was really, really difficult for me. I could scroll Twitter. I could watch the news, but I couldn't focus. And, you know, a fever for 14 days will do that to you. Right. But it was, the other day I was like, okay, I think I'm feeling claustrophobic because I have two books that need attention. One is a nonfiction piece. One is a middle grade mystery. Mm-hmm. I have incredible notes for both. I know what I need to do, and I am just balking. So I decided to give myself a break because I feel like even if we are feeling comfortable and we have enough food on the fridge and our, you know, our electricity is being paid, we're good, like solidly financially stable at this moment, not stressing about anything, this specter is still here, and it changes our mindset. And so I thought, okay, yes. I'm feeling claustrophobic. Like, I'm not supposed to leave my house. Yes, I can go walk my neighborhood, but like, no, not driving anybody to school. I'm not doing all those things. So I'm feeling, I don't feel stifled, but I just feel like there's parameters that are very specific. And going to look and rework a book is putting me in parameters that are very specific. So right. I just decided that I would start a story, which I have not given myself the joy of doing because I have been doing these rewrites for like 3 years. Mm-hmm. So I haven't just sort of gone, where does this page take me? And I thought, well, if I was, you know, I'm going to do that, I'm just going to write. What if? What if pandemic and what if 9/11? And both of them, I wrote about 3 pages on, a couple of notes on the side, and then I put them aside. Mm-hmm. And then I sat down and I wrote 2 blog posts.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is, you know, it is that thing of just the physical action. Mm-hmm. However you write, writing handwritten, writing on a keyboard, whatever you do, keeps you from going, oh my God, I don't know where to go. Yep. And sometimes when I don't know where to go with a story, but I know there's a scene that's coming that I haven't written yet. Like I know this has to take place. Mm-hmm. Or I've got a bit of backstory that isn't going to necessarily be in the book, but I want to see it. I want to flesh it out. Mm-hmm. I'll just open a nude Word doc,
new feature I hadn't heard about.
Just no. Yeah, there we go.
Well, technically they're nude until you start putting letters in there. Right,
there you go. Exactly.
So I'm going to dress the Word doc and just give myself the freedom of, you know, writing this scene from this character's childhood or writing the scene between these 2 characters that's coming, but I haven't gotten there yet in the story.
Right.
And that will bring me back into writing again. So I feel like, I honestly feel that writer's block is an excuse, and it's kind of like going, oh, well, I didn't have time today to, you know, clean my bathroom because I was too busy scrolling Twitter and looking at Cuomo's comments about New York and Newsom's comments about California. And so I couldn't. No, like I could have listened to the news conference while I cleaned the bathroom. So I feel like this is the same thing. It's like I can't go any further right now because I don't know where this goes. Okay, fine. But you know there's a piece of history for that character you could write. You know, there's a scene coming up that you could write. You could start another story just for the heck of it to get it down because it's been ticking at the back of your head. I just feel like I don't believe in it. I don't. And I do think it's an excuse. I think it's I would almost say cop out to, you know, what is that quote about how we're not afraid of failing. We're afraid of our own power. Mm. And we're afraid, like, what happens if the 3 of us become as successful as my dad or J.K. Rowling or Kurt Vonnegut or Dickens or, you know,
right.
Yeah.
Are we afraid of it? Are we getting there? Stay in the story because those characters need you to work their life out.
Right. That's a good point. And it brings me to something that I wanted to talk about. Harkening back to the Facebook Live that you did a while back on character development, the thing that I realized in retrospect when we finished was that group of people that got together to do that, basically in answering your 25 questions, the worksheet you have on your website, we wrote his story. The plot became self-evident as we learned more and more about, what do we call him, J-Dog?
Yeah.
As we learned more and more about J-Dog, his story appeared before our eyes. It was amazing.
It's really, you know, I love teaching that class because it's always different and it energizes me. And I can teach it to, you know, 7-year-olds, 6-year-olds, and I can teach it to, you know, adults. It everybody can enjoy it because it's this creation, it's this collaborative creation. it was interesting because I go back to that one question. And you say, you know, no care. That one of the things about characters, no character will do anything that isn't in his own, that he doesn't perceive is in his own best interest.
Right.
And somebody in my class in Dallas at the Dallas Fort Worth conference said, "What if it's a, you know, it's a Marine or an Army guy, and he jumps on a bomb or he jumps on
a grenade or something?" Right. Right.
Right. How is that his own best interest? And I started to answer it, and then I stopped and I said, "Is there anybody in here? You know, is there anybody military in this room?" Right. And well, I was, and I said, "Would you please explain this? Because I don't want to explain it wrong, and you're going to tell him better." And so he went on about saying, "You know, you become part of a unit, and what is best for the unit is what you do. And there would be no thought process.
There wouldn't be, because you're taught that that the unit is what matters.
The unit is you.
Right.
You are the unit that you are. These guys. You are all. You know, it's Walking Dead. I am Negan."
Yep.
You know, but on a positive note, you know, it's like we are all this person, but it's this person that is made up of lots of people.